them from your own room for me," I said. "Oh, no, I've done many more. They're in every room." "You're very prolific." "Oh, I meant every room that we inhabit. Most of Frackingham is empty. We don't need all of it." "Who are we, exactly?" She set the cushion down on the chair and arranged it just so, then rearranged it again. "Jack and me, of course, and Uncle August."
"Jack's father?"
"No."
"So he's Jack's uncle as well as yours?"
"Yes, of course. You do ask a lot of questions." She opened one of the cupboard doors. "There is a selection of gowns here, and jackets. They should all fit nicely, as long as Jack was right."
I frowned. "Right about what?"
"Your measurements. He assured me he could tell your size just by looking at you."
"Jack first appeared at Windermere 2 weeks ago. Don't tell me you've had them all made since then, based on the guess of someone who's only seen me a few times and at a distance."
"Not all of them were made new. Some are altered ones of mine. I hope you don't mind. As to the fit, Jack's rarely wrong."
How irritating. "An expert on women's sizes, is he?"
She flashed me a mischievous grin. "I think you've made an impression on him. He almost smiled earlier, and when you get to know him better, you'll learn that he smiles rarely."
"I don't wish to get to know him. I wish to go home." It sounded petulant, but I didn't care. The Langley cousins might have been all solicitude toward me, but fear tightened my chest. Besides, I wanted to see Vi again. She must have been frantic with worry. Sylvia turned suddenly and strode to the dressing table situated in the bay window. Her fingers lightly caressed the silver-capped perfume bottles, the combs, brushes, and a silver candlestick and trinket boxes. It was as if she sought comfort in the familiar objects, or perhaps it was merely a way of avoiding eye contact with me.
"You'll find unmentionables in the drawers."
I came up beside her and looked out the arch window. I could just see the lake and the ruins off to one side. Beyond that were wooded hills, and little else. The village the cousins had spoken of must be in another direction. My soul thrilled at the sight of a new vista, so different from the one I had stared at every day for years. Yet I felt a stab of sorrow, and the cold lump of unease, too. I might never see the view over Windermere's park again.
"How old is this place?" I asked. Talking about the history of Frackingham might keep my nerves under control. Hopefully. "The estate itself is ancient. People have been living and worshipping here for centuries."
She pointed at the ruins.
"That was Frackingham Abbey. It belonged to the Cistercian order, but was abandoned and fell into ruin around the time of the dissolution of the monasteries. It's rather a pleasant place to picnic now in the summertime."
"It looks eerie."
"I suppose it does."
She looked at my crossed arms as I hugged myself.
"Don't worry. There are no ghosts here that we know of. Indeed, this building is only about 60 years old, although you wouldn't know it."
"I thought it was medieval."
"Not at all. The previous Lord Frackingham wanted a grand house built in the Gothic style. He bankrupted the estate in the process, and his heir had to sell it when the place began to need repairs."
"Your uncle bought it?"
She tilted her chin, and her eyes flashed. "He did. He's a self-made man, Uncle August. He worked his way up from nothing to be able to afford this.
The son of a grocer, now living in the same house that a lord built. Imagine that!
Yes, imagine. I had no idea how expensive it would be to buy something on the scale of Frackingham, but it must be considerable. Few Englishmen who hadn't been born into the upper echelons of society could afford it. No wonder Sylvia was proud of her uncle. I'd like to meet him. Now, if you please. Commanding her allowed me to command my own trepidation, as the full extent of my situation sank in. Well, to a certain extent, at least. Sylvia bristled.
Demands won't get you anywhere with Uncle. As it happens, he wants to see you immediately anyway. Let's get you ready. She spun me around and scanned me from head to toe. These clothes are so drab. They won't do. Uncle August expects women of your status to dress accordingly. He likes order, you see. Her nimble fingers unbuttoned my jacket. Servants ought to dress like servants, shopkeepers like shopkeepers, and ladies like ladies. I'm surprised your father doesn't, too. I'd have thought an earl would be more of a stickler for these things than uncle.
Who knows what Lord Wade thinks? I muttered, as I allowed her to take off my jacket. There was no point in arguing with her, either about who my father may or may not be, or about what I should wear to meet her uncle. The prospect of meeting him filled me with foreboding. What sort of man inspired a nice girl like Sylvia to fumble nervously with the hooks and eyes on my dress? What sort of man had his niece and nephew kidnap for him?
Chapter 3. Uncle August's rooms take up the entire topmost floor of the eastern wing of the house, Sylvia said as we hurried up the stairs. It was growing late in the day, and being almost winter, the sun had already begun to set. The stairwell would have been dark if it wasn't for the small candle-shaped gas lamps attached to the walls. There are a few things you ought to know about Uncle August before you meet him. First of all, he can't walk.
How does he get about?
In a wheelchair. How did he lose the use of his legs? It was an accident of some sort. He doesn't like to talk about it, and you're not to ask him.
That was like telling a fish not to swim. Yet I would hold my tongue. For now. My situation was too precarious to jeopardize it.
So he doesn't walk, but he lives all the way up here? We'd reached the landing on the top floor. Sylvia had told me that the Langleys used only the eastern part of the house. Her uncle occupied the second floor. Sylvia, Jack and I had rooms on the first, and the ground floor was where the dining room could be found, along with the formal drawing-room, and a more intimate, informal parlour. Staff quarters were at the rear of the house, with the kitchen and other service-rooms.
"He has everything he needs up here," Sylvia said, her tone clipped.
"Everything except his freedom."
"When one doesn't have the use of one's legs, how much freedom can be expected?"
I thought it a narrow view, but didn't say so. Her curt manner invited no opinion. Besides, I was too anxious to argue with her. My stomach began to churn again, and I had a pressing urge to turn around and run back down the stairs. I wondered what Sylvia and Jack would do if I just walked out the door, returned to Windermere, and kidnapped the real Violet Jameson. We paused at a door on the landing, and Sylvia drew in a deep breath. She let it out slowly and knocked. The door was opened by Jack. He'd changed into formal evening wear of black tailcoat
waistcoat and trousers, white shirt and necktie. His hair was neatly combed back, and he looked every inch the lord of the manor.
"Come in, ladies."
He stepped aside.
"He's waiting for you."
The room was very large, running half the length of the eastern wing. The far end was crowded with low tables, cupboards and desks, and a bench ran along one wall. Most of the surfaces were covered with lamps, paperwork or equipment that appeared to be scientific in nature. I recognised glass bottles, burners, at least two sets of scales, and a cabinet housing dozens of small drawers. There were tools, too, but I was too far away to identify them, and I probably couldn't anyway. Science was not my strength, as Miss Levine had frequently informed me. The rest of the room where we stood was more sparsely furnished. A deep leather chair hunkered near the hearth, a small table close by, and one wall housed densely packed bookshelves. I couldn't make out their subject matter. Three of Sylvia Frackingham's paintings decorated another wall in a perfectly neat row. Not a single one hung crookedly. There was another chair, too, but it had wheels instead of legs, and was occupied by a man dressed in a crimson and gold smoking jacket. He was quite handsome for a gentleman of about 40 or so, despite the silvery streaks through his blonde hair and the slight slackening of his jaw. He could have been even more handsome if he wasn't frowning so hard that his mouth was little more than a pink slash in his pale face. He was broad in the shoulders, too, but his waistcoat bulged at his middle, and he filled the chair completely. Behind him stood a very tall man with stooped shoulders. His dark hair had receded, leaving a pronounced widow's peak at the front. It was difficult to tell how old he was, or what his nature might be. Indeed, he reminded me of an automaton, awaiting his key to be turned. He simply stood there, quite still, his hands behind his back, staring unblinkingly ahead.
"Welcome, Lady Violet,"
the man in the wheelchair said.
"I am August Langley. You've met my niece and nephew."
"You know I have," I snapped. I refused to make it easy for him, just as I refused to wipe my clammy palms down my skirt. Instead, I clasped my hands in front of me, the picture of calm serenity. Or so I hoped. August Langley looked down at his lap and expelled a breath. It was a long, awkward moment before he spoke again.
"Please sit down."
"I'd rather stand." Sylvia gave a little gasp, and I felt Jack stiffen. It wasn't just that I didn't want to do this man's bidding, although that was certainly part of my reason for refusing. I also felt awkward sitting when others were standing. If Sylvia and Jack left, then perhaps I would sit to be on a level with Langley. Being alone with him was the very last thing I wanted, however.
"Forward, Bollard,"
Langley said. As if his key had been turned, the man behind Langley came to life. He stooped even more and pushed the wheelchair until Langley put up his hand to stop. The servant let the chair's handles go and settled once more into a stiff stance. Langley tipped his head to look up at me.
"I suppose you've guessed why you're here."
"Actually, no. It's quite a mystery. Your relations wouldn't divulge anything, despite my questions. After the method in which I was snatched from my home, I think I'm entitled to some answers. Don't you?"
"Don't try to turn this into something it's not, Violet. I may call you Violet.
I looked down my nose at him in the most imperial manner I could muster. It was not something I'd seen Vi ever do, even with Miss Levine, but I thought I made a good attempt. What do you mean? Turn it into something it's not. This is exactly what it appears to be. Abduction, imprisonment, extortion.
Not extortion.
He said nothing about the other two accusations. So it was true. He intended to keep me. My knees suddenly buckled, but Jack caught me by the elbow and steered me to the chair. I sat down heavily and struggled to catch my breath. The damned corset was too tight, and I had to gasp for air.
It's not what you think,
Jack said, crouching beside me.
We mean you no harm.
Jack!
Langley snapped. Jack straightened to his full height and glared down at his uncle with such ferocity I thought he might punch him.
She's frightened. I was the one who had to do your dirty work, and now she's frightened of me. Forgive me if I find the need to offer comfort.
Langley didn't take his hard gaze off his nephew, and I got the feeling, if he could stand, he would square up to Jack and use his bulk to intimidate.
Jack, perhaps now is not the time, Sylvia said in a sing-song voice.
She came up beside him and looped her arm through his. Despite the placating tone of her voice, I could tell she was using all her strength to drag Jack away. Finally, with a flare of his nostrils, Jack obliged her. I immediately felt less secure, and when I felt afraid, I talked.
Then what do you want with me? If you mean me no harm, why am I here?
Langley turned his steely grey gaze on me.
I'd heard you were clever.
I bristled.
Heard from whom?
Never mind that. You're not here because of who you are, but what you are.
My heartbeat slowed. My cheeks cooled. I sat very still and stared at Langley, although I didn't really see him. I'd known it all along, but I'd not wanted to admit it. I'd been kidnapped because they thought I was Vi, and Vi could start fires with her mind. I swallowed hard. Langley was going to be in for a rude shock when he discovered I couldn't set anything alight without matches. And once he did, then what?
But why do you want someone who can start fires? I asked.
To train you.
Pardon?
Jack is going to teach you to use your power at will and control it.
I held up my hands, closed my eyes. My breath seemed unnaturally loud in my ears.
One thing at a time. For what purpose are you training me?
You cannot go about setting things ablaze willy-nilly. You'll never be able to function in the real world if you don't learn to control it. We're going to help you, Violet. The sooner you see that, the sooner you'll accept your situation here.
My situation being that I am a prisoner at Frackingham.
Leaving would be foolish, and I've already established that you're a clever girl.
Clever people can do foolish things.
He gave a slight nod.
I advise you against trying to leave. I know your father kept you confined to the attic, but you'll have more freedom here.
He was worried I would set fire to something, and we lacked nothing.
How do you know? Did you see what he gave your younger sister? Did you?
His words would have hurt, if I really were Lady Violet Jameson. I knew she loved her father, despite everything. I think she secretly hoped he would remove her from the attic one day and introduce her to society. She'd been bitterly disappointed after her 18th birthday, when it became obvious her position, and mine, wouldn't change. She'd been sad, sadder, for weeks.
That's enough, August,
Jack said, his voice ominously low.
We don't want to rile her.
Let's go downstairs, Sylvia said rather too brightly. It must be almost dinner time, and I've a grand feast planned for our guest. She beamed at me so hard her cheeks must have ached from the effort.
A good idea.
Jack held out his hand to me, but quickly withdrew it with a glance in Langley's direction. Langley scowled at him.
I believe Violet has one last question to ask me.
I do, I said. Why is Jack going to be the one to train me?
Do you care to answer this?
Langley pointed his chin at his nephew.
Perhaps she shouldn't be overwhelmed just yet, Jack said.
Come now, I know you're desperate to tell her.
August, don't. It's too soon.
I'm ordering you to tell her.
Jack stretched his fingers, then closed them into fists.
Very well.
He turned to me, and I was shocked at the feverish colour of his green eyes, the mocking set of his mouth.
We're two of a kind, you and I, Lady Violet. As far as I know, we're the only two fire starters in England, perhaps the world. I don't know why or how, but we just is.
We should join a travelling sideshow. Or perhaps not travelling. We could stay put. Make the customers come to us. Fleece them of every penny while we set their hats on fire. That's enough, Jack,
Langley warned.
Be famous, we would,
Jack went on, his chest rising and falling with his hard breathing.
So, what you think, Vi? I said enough.
Jack. Sylvia whispered. She hesitantly reached for his hand, but when their fingers touched, she sprang back with a yelp. A spark shot from Jack's fingertip, but Sylvia stamped on it before it could scorch the rug. I rose out of the chair and stared at Jack. I couldn't take my eyes off him. I'd never witnessed Vi during one of her episodes, my narcolepsy having shielded me from that. And to see actual sparks erupt from his bare skin was incredible. Not frightening, but curiously thrilling. It wasn't the only thing that shocked me. His outburst had been unexpected, but not nearly as much as his accent. It had changed from the cultured tones of a gentleman to something altogether different. Something I'd never heard before, but had read about in books. Indeed, some of the characters in Mr. Dickens' novels spoke like that in my head when I read their dialogue. It was only the poor characters, however. Labourers, beggars, thieves, murderers, and street urchins. Which category did Jack Langley fit into?
Are you all right?
Sylvia asked him. Jack nodded, without taking his gaze off me. He seemed calm, his face expressionless. It was his eyes that gave away his true feelings. They were as wild as a stormy sea. But just before he turned away, I caught a glimpse of something else in their depths. Something that made him look as lost as a little boy. He strode out of the room, leaving the door open.
Well,
Sylvia huffed.
Is there anything else, Uncle?
Langley lifted a hand in a dismissive gesture.
Jack knows what to do.
He spoke heavily, as if the little scene had sapped his strength.
The window, Bollard.
The servant wheeled him toward the window and positioned the chair so that Langley could see out. Shall we dine, Violet? Sylvia asked, smiling. Did she ever not smile? I wanted to make a quip to prove that I was unaffected by everything I'd seen and heard, but nothing came to mind. I allowed Sylvia to lead me down the stairs to the dining room. The long table was set for three, but the third place was empty. A footman brought in a soup tureen and set it on the sideboard. He hovered until Sylvia asked him to serve. "Jack will come when he's ready," she said as the footman ladled soup into her bowl. "His accent changed up there," I said. "Why is that?" "It happens when he's upset." She glanced at the door, then at the footman. He paused in his duties and stared at me. "You mustn't speak of it to him," she went on. He doesn't like talking about it. First your uncle and his legs, and now Jack and his accent. Is there anything in this house that we can discuss?
The weather,
said Jack, striding in. He looked and sounded quite composed again. He sat at the vacant seat opposite us.
I'm starving. You must be too, Violet. We both missed our luncheon today.
It seemed he was going to pretend nothing untoward had happened in his uncle's rooms. I'm not feeling particularly hungry. I waved away the second ladle of soup. It's amazing what being abducted can do to one's appetite. I highly recommend it for ladies wishing to shrink their waists.
Your waist is already tiny, Sylvia said.
I think Violet was being sarcastic,
Jack said.
I know that. Forgive me if I'd prefer to gloss over the nastier events of the day while I'm eating.
Speaking of which, I'm sorry to say that your reticule couldn't be saved, Syl.
That's quite all right. I didn't like it any more anyway. She suddenly brightened. Perhaps we can go shopping together and buy a new one, she said to me. I was so taken aback that I spilled some soup on the tablecloth.
I don't think that's a good idea,
Jack said.
But Uncle August told me she's free to come and go.
I witnessed a silent exchange between the cousins as they communicated without words. Jack's glare was quite stern, and Sylvia's smile changed from genuinely hopeful to falsely polite. She was not the sort who could hide her feelings.
"Perhaps we'll go when you've settled in," she said to me, "in a week or more."
"She won't have time before then anyway," Jack said. "Training begins tomorrow. I can't spare her."
"Ah, yes, training," I said. "Your uncle stated that I was brought here so that you could help me learn to control my affliction."
"It's not an affliction," Sylvia said.
Her response sounded automatic, as if she were repeating something often said. I grunted. "That's easy for you to say. As for the training, forgive me if I don't believe Mr. Langley."
Sylvia blinked her wide blue eyes. "Why wouldn't you believe him?"
"Because I was kidnapped."
"I don't understand."
"You knew I lived in the attic, which meant Lord Wade, my father, obviously cared little for me. It would also be a natural supposition that I was eager to leave the attic. My removal to your uncle's care could have gone ahead without this fuss if you'd simply asked to have me, all of which implies that your reasons are less pure, and you didn't wish to explain them to Lord Wade. Sylvia continued to stare at me, her spoon drooping over her bowl, the soup forgotten.
"You make a lot of assumptions," Jack said.
"What does Langley really want with me?" I asked. Jack returned to his soup, and it was left to Sylvia to answer.
"Uncle August truly does want to help you."
She glanced at Jack, then back at me.
"He's not a bad man."
I said nothing to that, and neither did Jack. The irony was, if they'd gone about the task as I'd suggested, and asked Lord Wade's permission, they would have gotten the correct Violet Jameson. As it was, they had an impostor. And this impostor was going to have to lie convincingly to make Jack believe she had the power to start fires. Either that, or avoid lying altogether, and simply escape. Chapter 4. I slept more soundly than I'd expected. The mattress was so comfortable, and the room so quiet, that I didn't wake until mid-morning. I'd fleetingly thought about trying to escape before nodding off, but dismissed the idea almost instantly. It's what they'd expect me to do, and they'd be watching me far too closely the first night. I rose and opened the heavy drapes, letting in the light. The sky was mostly blue, with some high clouds scudding quickly across it, thanks to what appeared to be a strong wind. The trees nearest the house swayed drunkenly, and two men who stood talking to one another in earnest held their hats on their heads. Or at least, one of them did. The other had a sturdy-looking tall helmet. A military man. It was odd that the two visitors were at the side of the house, not the front, where they could be greeted. I briefly considered trying to catch their attention and begging their assistance in getting away from Frackingham, but it was likely they were friends of the Langleys and would be disinclined to believe me. Besides, I wasn't appropriately dressed. I opened the cupboard and selected a simple morning dress of cream and green that fastened up the front. The cotton felt lovely and soft, and I spent a good minute or so just petting it and rubbing it against my cheek. It was perhaps a little flimsy for the cool weather, but I didn't care. It wasn't made of wool, and that was all that mattered. I dressed without a corset, since I had no one to help, and arranged my hair as best I could. Without Vi, it was difficult to wrestle it all up into an elegant style, but I managed to pin some of it back, so that I at least didn't look like a lion. I also found a silk choker in the same shade of green as the dress, and fixed it around my throat. Miracle of miracles, I found my way downstairs, only getting lost once, and winding up at a locked door, which I assumed led to the disused part of the house. I found Sylvia in the small parlour, looking out the window, her arms crossed, as if hugging herself. "Good morning," I said. She turned, and a smile quickly chased away her frown. "Good morning," she said, coming toward me. "Did you sleep well? I didn't want you woken until you were quite ready. You looked exhausted last night." "Thank you. I slept like a log." She studied me from head to toe, and her smile slipped a little. "You should have rung for one of the maids to help you dress." I'm not used to being dressed by a maid. Indeed, none of the Windermere attic rooms had been fitted with bell pulls to summon the servants. They cleaned our bedroom when we were in the parlour, and they cleaned the parlour when we were in our bedroom or out walking. I rarely saw them, and never rang for them.
"Really?"
Sylvia looked quite shocked. "My friend helped me, and I helped her." An ache lodged in my heart at the thought of Vi,
alone and sad in the attic. Dear Lord, take care of her. Don't let her fret too much. I must have looked quite forlorn, because Sylvia took both my hands and gave them a squeeze. Lucky you don't need a corset. I couldn't put it on by myself, and this dress was the only one with buttons down the front. It is a lovely dress, and I hoped you'd like it, but it is more suited to warmer days. I'll be warm enough. Yes, of course. She tugged on the bell pull near the fireplace. A small fire burned in the grate, but it was all the cozy room required. You've missed breakfast, but I'll have Tommy fetch you something. Tommy? The footman. You have only the one. We live simply here, and have no need of more. Uncle has Bollard to see to his needs. Tommy sees to ours. And there is the housekeeper, Mrs. Moore, two upstairs maids, the cook, and a scullery maid. Oh, and Olson, the carriageman, who oversees the grooms. There are some gardeners, too, of course, but I don't know how many. Did you have much more at Windermere? I imagine you did, your father being the grand earl that he is. I don't know. Oh, no. Of course not. She cleared her throat and looked relieved when Tommy the footman entered. She requested a light breakfast be brought to me in the parlour, then indicated I should sit next to her on the settee. Jack should be ready for you by the time you finish. Something unexpected has arisen this morning that required his attention. He's with Uncle now. I didn't sit, but went to the window instead. Nobody was about outside in the wind. Does it have something to do with those visitors this morning?
You saw them?
Yes. Who were they? I turned back to her, but she was looking down at an embroidery hoop in her lap. A sewing basket lay open at her feet. Well? I prompted.
I'm not sure I'm at liberty to say.
She picked up the hoop, but didn't stitch.
Let's wait for Jack to arrive.
I was beginning to think Sylvia was very much like Vi, neither wished to say or do the wrong thing, and both saw their position in the household as a lowly one compared to the other members. At least Sylvia put herself above the servants, if her direct manner with Tommy was any indication. Vi had never given Miss Levine an order when she was perfectly within her rights to do so.
"I will take you shopping, you know," Sylvia said.
"Shopping?
After you've settled in."
"I wouldn't hold out much hope. Your cousin doesn't want me to run off. Understandable, considering the trouble he went to abducting me. I can't imagine how awful it must have been for him to pretend to be a gardener for 2 whole weeks.
Is that sarcasm again?"
Sylvia chuckled.
"I dare you to say that to his face."
"Be careful. I rarely back down from a dare." She dropped her needle, and her eyes widened.
"It was only a joke. Don't tell him I suggested it."
"Why not? Are you afraid of him?" She concentrated on her stitching for a long moment, then said,
"He can be unpredictable."
Unpredictable. The word was like a siren song to me. I'd lived with routine and order my entire life. I did the same thing. Day in and day out, saw the same people, walked the same paths. As much as I would do anything to see Vi again, I was missing my life at Windermere less and less with each passing hour. Sylvia was different enough to be interesting, but her cousin was positively exciting. He was a mystery I wanted to solve. That morning, I'd look for him around every corner,
hoped to see him in every room I'd passed through.
"He never complained, you know," she said.
"Jack? About what?"
"About being a gardener. He only returned home once during that time, and all he spoke about was how poorly treated you were. It was he who discovered you were kept in the attic, not of your own volition, but on Lord Wade's order." "How could he possibly have learned that?" "He said your governess tailed you everywhere on your walks, and that a free woman would not be in need of such close guard."
I was taken aback by this keen observation, and rendered quite speechless. Tommy arrived with my breakfast. I ate toast and poached eggs at the table by the window. Unlike the previous night, I was terribly hungry, and I was intent on finishing everything on my plate when Jack arrived.
"Good morning, ladies," he said. "Sleep well, Violet."
My mouth was too full to respond in any manner other than a nod. I pressed a napkin to my lips to cover my chewing and to dab away any crumbs. It would be too embarrassing to have such a man as he see me with half my breakfast on my chin. He was too handsome, too self-assured, and I was the naive mad woman kept in an attic most of her life. That didn't stop me from looking at him. It seemed that every time I set eyes on him, I noticed something new and intriguing. The intensity of his green eyes, the bow-like curve of his mouth, or the small scars on his upper lip and above his right eyebrow. With the sunlight streaming through the window, I saw that his hair had different shades of brown through it. Some light strands, some so dark to be almost black, and everything in between.
"Yes, thank you,"
I finally said, sounding a little breathy.
"I'm afraid our training will have to wait. I must leave for Harborough immediately. I won't be back until this afternoon."
Sylvia set down her embroidery hoop.
"Why?"
"August's business."
"Oh.
Does it have anything to do with those men who were here?" I asked.
"The constabulary?"
Sylvia said.
"Police?"
Jack scowled at her.
"Syl, hold your tongue."
"If you wish me to live here," I said, "then I expect to be treated as you treat each other. I won't be kept in the dark. Is that understood?"
Jack's eyes narrowed.
"Quite,"
he bit off. Sylvia made a small choking sound in the back of her throat, but when I glanced at her, she was intent on her embroidery.
"Were they both policemen?" I asked. "One wore a helmet."
"He was a constable in uniform," Jack said. "The plainly dressed gentleman was a detective inspector."
I set the napkin down and met those all-seeing green eyes.
"Were they looking for me?"
"No."
Was it my imagination, or did sympathy flicker across his face?
"Someone broke in last night. Some of August's papers were stolen, and he's in a bit of a state about it. August in a state is not a pretty sight."
"What sort of papers?"
"I don't know. He wouldn't tell me. The inspector was called for this morning, and he and his constable asked some questions, took some notes, and generally poked about. The only thing they achieved was making an inconvenience of themselves. They even failed to question all the staff, which means they missed a vital clue."
"What clue?"
"The imprint of a muddy boot was left on the floor in the scullery."
"How thrilling," Sylvia said. "Just like in a novel."
That earned another glare from Jack.
"I measured it and sketched the sole pattern. I'll ride into Harborough to deliver it to the inspector."
Are you certain the boot doesn't belong to one of the staff?
It was larger than mine or any of the staff.
To think, the authorities had been to Frackingham, and I'd missed them. I could have thrown myself upon their mercy and pleaded my case. Would they have taken my word over Langley's? I didn't know, but it galled that I'd missed the opportunity to try.
I'm sorry, Violet,
Jack said.
I wanted to begin training today.
Never mind. Another daring plan had already begun to form. I was desperate enough to carry it out, too, despite the fear almost overriding my determination. Almost, but not quite.
Just be sure not to have an episode in my absence, or try to escape.
I'll try not to, but alas, I may not be able to control myself. There was that twist of his mouth again, that almost smile.
Syl, will you be all right?
Of course.
Tommy is here if you need anything.
I would have asked what he meant by that, but he excused himself and left. So I asked Sylvia instead. Why did he mention Tommy?
I couldn't say.
Is your footman going to restrain me if I try to leave?
Of course not.
I finished my breakfast, and when I got up, she quickly rose too, toppling her embroidery hoop to the floor. I only wish to look out the window, I said. She sat again, her relief obvious. I stood by the bay window and watched Jack ride down the drive on horseback. He was unaccompanied, which I thought a little unwise, until I remembered he could set a man on fire if he found himself in trouble. He turned back suddenly, as if he realized I'd been watching, and our gazes locked. He lifted his hand, and I thought he was about to wave. Then he gathered up the reins again and turned away. The horse broke into a gallop, and Jack was soon gone from sight. Now all I had to do was avoid Tommy, and I would be free. I waited until he had removed my breakfast dishes and been gone for some time before yawning. Sylvia didn't notice, so intent was she on her sewing. I yawned again and stretched.
"Still tired?" she said, looking up.
"I think I'll retreat to my room for a rest."
"Of course. I'll wake you for luncheon.
I hope you don't mind, but I won't be joining you. Breakfast was quite sufficient to see me through the rest of the day."
Sylvia's face fell a little. "Oh, it'll just be me, then."
I almost felt sorry for her, but her loneliness was not my concern. I left her and headed toward the staircase. Instead of going up, however, I walked straight past and through an arch that led to a short corridor and a number of closed doors. I bypassed those and headed along another corridor before reaching what appeared to be a door leading outside. I glanced behind me. All silent. No one followed. I pushed the door open and found myself in an empty, gravelled courtyard, bordered on three sides by the house. I paused, listened. Still nothing. I half walked, half ran across the courtyard, looking left and right and back over my shoulder. The wind battered at my skirt and made a mockery of my attempt at arranging my own hair. By the time I'd exited the courtyard, my hair had broken free of its pins and whipped across my face as I glanced this way and that. The benefit to finding myself at the rear of the house was that there was a wood nearby. Parks and formal gardens provided a pretty vista from the front and eastern side of Frackingham, but those open spaces weren't of much benefit for an escapee. There was a gravelled road and small grassy patch to cross before I entered the safety of the trees. I checked once more behind me, then lifted my skirts and ran. My heeled boots weren't made for running fast, but I didn't slow until I reached a dense clutch of trees that couldn't be seen from the wood's edge. I hid behind a large oak and leaned against the trunk to catch my breath. Safe. No one had followed. I pushed on, wanting to get far away from Frackingham and whatever the Langleys had in store for me. They might seem pleasant enough on the outside, but there was certainly something odd going on. Something besides Jack's ability to start fires. Perhaps if I really did have the same affliction as he, I would be more inclined to see if they really could help me control it. But I couldn't let them discover that I didn't, and Vi did. I didn't trust them, and Vi was my one true friend, a sister in every sense of the word except biological. I would protect her with every last breath in my body. To my sickening horror, I realized that meant I couldn't return to Windermere. The Langleys would look for me there. I had to steer them away from Vi and disappear forever. Tears pricked my eyes, but I forced them back as I pushed on along a narrow, winding path. My mind and heart, however, remained in turmoil. Perhaps that's why I didn't see Bollard until it was too late. He stepped out from behind a tree and grabbed my arm. I screamed. He clamped a hand over my mouth, dragging me back against his body. He smelled like damp earth and mouldy leaves, and he carried a shovel. I struggled, but he was much too strong. I bit his hand. He grunted and let go. I scampered away, but my heel was higher than what I was used to, and I toppled over and fell on my hands and knees in the decaying leaves. Bollard caught me again and shook the shovel in my face. His lips pulled back in a snarl. I turned my head and tried to jerk myself free, but his long fingers locked around my arm.
"Let me go!"
He shook his head, but said nothing.
"I have a right to go where I please."
Another shake of his head. Why didn't he speak? Was the man a mute? No wonder the manor was dubbed Freak House. I was beginning to think Sylvia was the only normal one there, although even she had an excessively sunny disposition that didn't seem natural. Bollard pulled me along with him back to the house. I resisted every step of the way, but of course it achieved nothing. It was like a bee flying into a gale, utterly pointless. Bees could sting, though. When we reached the courtyard, I threw the most terrible, ear-splitting tantrum, complete with colourful curses and the most awful names I could think of to call him. It didn't halt Bollard's progress in the least, but it did draw the attention of the servants and Sylvia. Three of the former peered out of the ground-floor service windows as we passed, their eyes as wide as saucers. Sylvia burst out the same door I'd used to escape and ran across the courtyard to us. Her face was a picture of pale horror, her bottom lip quivering. She blinked back tears. What she had to cry about, I'd no idea. I ought to be the one in tears. Yet I had no intention of crying, nor any inclination. The shouting must have got it all out of my system, and I quieted when Sylvia grabbed my other arm. She let it go again with a gasp.
"Be calm, Violet, for heaven's sake!"
"I'm finding that rather difficult at the moment," I spat, "all things considered." She edged away from me.
"What happened? Violet, did you..."
She glanced up at the rooms on the top floor of the eastern wing, and a shiver racked her. I followed her gaze and saw August Langley watching us from a window.
"Did you try to escape?"
she whispered. I lifted my chin. "Of course. Unfortunately, Bollard here was doing a bit of gardening in the woods. What were you doing, Bollard? Digging a grave?" Sylvia gasped and covered her mouth with her hands. She eyed Bollard's shovel with horror.
Oh, God, if she were frightened, then perhaps my off-handed remark wasn't so absurd.
Where before I'd felt hot from my exercise and anger, now icy cold fingers wrapped around my heart. I couldn't dislodge the notion from my head. But if he was digging a grave at his master's behest, whose was it? Mine? Bollard marched me to the house and up the stairs to Langley's rooms. Sylvia didn't follow. "Aren't you coming?" I called back to her. She shook her head.
"I haven't been summoned."
I'd been right about her. That sunny disposition was all a facade. She was as afraid of her uncle as I was. I swallowed the lump in my throat. I could do this alone. There was nothing to fear. Indeed, I had every right to be furious, and damnation I would be. One look at the anger in Langley's eyes had my heart in my throat again, and my nerves jangling. If he'd been able to stand and approach me, I'd no doubt he would have slapped me. He still might order Bollard to do it. The servant held his shovel like a weapon and stood between me and the door.
"Stupid, stupid girl," Langley spat. "I thought you more sensible than that."
"Then it seems you were quite wrong. Wrong about more things than he knew." Colour flushed his cheeks, but his lips turned stark white.
"Did I give you permission to speak?"
As if being kept prisoner weren't enough, he wanted to make me as mute as Bollard, too. "I don't need your permission, Mr. Langley," I snapped. "I have a tongue, and will use it." Something inside me rose with my anger and filled me up until I was brimming with it. Something familiar, yet wrong. Something terrible and ill-timed. My limbs became heavy. My mind dulled so that I could no longer form words. My skin felt like 1,000 needles had been injected into it. Langley's eyes widened.
"Move, Bollard!"
He wheeled himself away from me so fast he backed into the occasional table, knocking it over and sending the two books that had been open upon it to the floor. Bollard retreated to the door. To stop me from leaving? It didn't matter. I knew what was about to happen, and I wouldn't be going anywhere. The last thing I remembered was falling to the floor. Chapter 5. I awoke as someone laid me gently on a bed. Bollard, I realized as I fought to lift my eyelids. It was my bed. The mute servant crossed the room and shut the curtains. Then he left the room. The loud click of the door being locked was